don't always have excessive amounts of show notes for this because it's meant to be relaxed and free-flowing, but I do have some notes, and they say, oh, that was a great Spanish Grand Prix. Pastor Maldonado won a race and everything. Woohoo!
Yeah. Are your show notes out of date for some reason?
I wrote some show notes for a show that never happened.
Oh, no. This is going to be my fault, isn't it?
Yeah, it is all your fault. We've actually talked about this briefly before because we did an impromptu show, but this is our first Feet Up Friday since the massive hiatus. And what was that hiatus all about, please?
Well, it was all my fault because I was slightly unwell and I'm still not...
You're on the mend.
Perfect. And basically, I couldn't record a show and therefore there were no shows. No. Because without me, there are no shows.
Exactly.
Well, F1 Minute carried on every single day without me, of course. But in terms of Feet Up Friday, it would be very difficult to do it by yourself. And I wasn't very well. All say ah.
Yeah.
We'll try.
Ah.
And but now I'm feeling an awful lot better. Not perfect, but for the first time in 8 weeks, I can hear you again. You know, which is a blessing and a curse.
But we are back, and the Spanish Grand Prix was won by Pastor Maldonado.
A long time ago.
A lot of other races have happened in between. most recently, the British Grand Prix, and I'm sure that we will talk about that anytime soon.
After our impromptu show, we got a tiny amount of grief from, well, it came from all quarters. Some on Facebook, some on Twitter. People were shocked, I think would be the best way of describing it, that we were criticising Maria de Velosa prior to her testing accident.
I don't think they were surprised we were criticising her. I think it's just unfortunate timing that we criticised her and then she had a big accident. Mm. And it was very uncertain for a few days what was going to happen to her. And people were saying things like, oh, I hope you don't feel guilty about what you said. Well, not really, because it's still true.
It was a terrible decision to employ her as a third driver when she didn't have a super license. And I stand by that criticism. However, she had a horrible accident whilst testing a Formula One car for the first time. Put her in hospital. It was very, very serious, life-threatening for a period. But she has rallied.
Yep.
And she is much better now.
Well, the latest update was, I think, 2 days ago. So that's about a week, 8 days after her accident. She had two surgeries, one of which was ridiculously long, like all night. But she is awake and I think they put it communicating freely, which I don't really know what that means. But she's talking with her family and things are looking a bit brighter.
It's often said that Formula One drivers recover faster than average human beings. And I think you'd have to say Maria's recovering faster than everybody expected, even those within Formula One. And it's good that she's made the recovery that she has made. I still think Marussia were wrong to employ her in the first place. Well, I don't think that, you know, it was the right person to put into that team.
I think our criticism...
And they should take some blame for that.
I think our criticism wasn't actually particularly harsh. She was saying that she doesn't have a super license, which she doesn't, as much as I don't. That is sort of a separate issue to crashing at a straight line test, which just shouldn't happen, is just bizarre.
It is. It is an extremely unfortunate accident. Desperately, desperately awful for her because, I mean, that is effectively her Formula One dreams are over because of that accident.
Interestingly, we talked a lot about what happens when Timo Glock can't race and Marussia are left without a driver and... this has happened with Maria, and there's been a two-day young driver test in Silverstone this week, and Marussia have fielded two young fellas who have now both got enough mileage to get their super licenses.
So they have learned, much like Ferrari learned from the Luca Badoa incident, when they had Luca Badoa running around the back very, very slowly and an embarrassment to that team. They soon learned that reserve drivers were incredibly important. I did want to point out one thing that I was slightly, what's the best way of describing it? I thought Marussia mishandled their tweeting situation surrounding the testing, because if you, prior to the test, they were jolly and they were happy and there was a build up and, you know, here we are in the morning, bright and early, bushy tailed, look at us, here's all the cool stuff for this going on. Then the accident happened and they shut the doors and they refused to speak on the social network for, I would guess, about 36 hours. To my mind, Formula One likes to think that it does really well in the social media world. But I do wonder if people the teams have tweeting are really trained to fully manage these situations. Because it really felt like they were out of their depth.
Yeah, but
Twitter.
It wouldn't have been appropriate to be like, oh, now she's at the hospital and this is happening and this happened. Because they didn't know. They didn't know what was happening. They couldn't say anything about the accident because they had to investigate it. I don't know what you think they could have said in the situation. They had to wait a long time because they didn't have any facts to hand.
All eyes were on Twitter for the latest updates because that's where testing updates were coming from.
They tweeted them when the statements came out.
They didn't. No, they said, if you want to know, we're not going to be tweeting anything about this. Go to our official website and look at our statement, is what they actually said. And I just thought that was not really the best way to handle it. Because if you wanted Formula One news, if you wanted the latest updates, F1 journalists managed to communicate perfectly well the information. They managed to get across the information in 140 characters without blowing the situation out of proportion. I thought, Formula One journalists handled everything incredibly well. But I just thought Marussia didn't do such a good job. And I don't know, maybe I just think that Formula One teams don't take Twitter seriously enough. They don't have people trained for all situations. They just have guys and girls out there with mobile phones tweeting all the good news, but not tweeting any of the bad stuff.
Well, I think you judge them too harshly. I mean, it's you can't prepare for a situation like that. It was unexpected. You just can't.
I don't know. I wonder if maybe, if it was NASCAR, they would have done it differently, or IndyCar, who were motorsports, which are better at handling social media than Formula One is. I would wonder if they would handle tweeting of an accident and updates following that accident better than Formula One did. I don't know. Just thought I'd mention it. Tell me if we have good news to discuss in Formula One.
Yeah, that was a bit of a serious start. Unfortunately, I can't get to the good news yet, because if we're going to talk about the action at Silverstone, we have to talk about all the non-action at Silverstone. And by that, I mean the car parks.
No!
We only have to talk about it briefly because...
Oh, it's more bad news. It's terrible news.
They can't control the weather. This is understandable. Mm-hmm. And if your car parks are flooding or whatever happened, it's hard to get around that. I understand. But turning people away from a race is never a good situation to be in. There must have been a solution. That really has to be like the last resort.
Well, our
last-ditch effort.
Our last show came off the back of you being in a very bad mood because you couldn't get to Goodwood.
I needed something to cheer me up.
You sat in a queue for 4.5 hours and you came back quite miffed. Hmm. How do you feel now that you know Formula One fans sat in a queue for 9.5 hours and still didn't get into Silverstone?
I feel like I got away very lightly. They paid a lot more money.
I am genuinely at a loss for words to describe my disbelief in the way that things went down at Silverstone. I did read in GP Plus magazine that part of the problem was the fact that the Olympics have commandeered all of the aluminium planking that usually goes down on grass car parks to strengthen them. And that's part of the problem that Goodwood had, and the reason that I think Goodwood lost one car park. And it's another reason that Silverstone had so many car parks out of action because of the Olympics. So that's a one-off event that's never going to happen again. You have to assume that Silverstone are going to learn from their mistakes.
Well, you would hope. But hasn't this happened to them before?
Yeah.
Everyone was referencing a previous
12 years ago,
year
10 years ago, something like that.
And I just don't understand. On the Friday, everyone was saying that they couldn't get there. They were stuck in traffic. And I know it's easy for me to sit here and go, well, why don't they just send a bus down the road, turn that into a car park and take everyone to the circuit, create a sort of park and ride using the roads, because no one is moving anyway. It's easy for me to sit here and say that. I don't know what the laws and the health and safety and all that rubbish that you'd have to sort out. But I just think that getting people in the gate has to be the most important thing. And turning people away, saying, please don't come to the race or to the qualifying, that just can't happen.
This was an exceptionally bad summer. A vast amount of rainfall fell in the days preceding the Grand Prix. But I don't know how they managed to forget all of their previous good work. And they just threw it all out the window and chaos ensued. I blame Damon Hill for leaving.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't have happened on his watch. That's all I can say.
But the rain didn't just affect the car parks and that. It also affected the action, because we saw a red flag in qualifying and a 90-minute delay.
That was long.
It was long. But
on and on and on. But when it rains like that, you can't do too much about it. Formula One, we've had plenty of discussions as to why Formula One cars can't run in the rain in the past. We've proposed lots of solutions. In 2007, I think, I suggested that Silverstone needed a roof. And I stand by that. I think it needs a very long roof, the length of the track.
Yeah, in the live comments, Lukey has just said they should use the roof from Wimbledon.
Just pull it across.
Yeah, that would work. Yeah,
you don't need the bit in the middle to be covered. A thin strip all the way around the circuit.
Right.
It can't be that hard to do. It would be very easy in Singapore. I mean, okay, here's another point. Singapore can light an entire circuit with floodlights and strip lights, etc., and all the gantry that goes around the circuit. So all you need is that again on the other side, and then panels across the top, and you'd have a completely dry track in all weathers.
Well, I think you need to suggest this to, I don't know, Dragon's Den or something.
I don't know how to make money out of
it. You sell it to the circuits, obviously.
Oh, okay. I was thinking purely from a fan's point of view. If you had a dry track, you would see more action, because on Friday, the fans that did get into the circuit didn't see very much action. There was, 11 laps, I think, was the most that was run in free practice one, and it didn't get much better in free practice two. You at least saw some action in qualifying, even if it was punctuated by an almighty break.
Yep. Fernando Alonso took pole position, which I think is something of a surprise.
What, because he was going backwards at one point on the grass?
because Ferrari have, I think they've been sneakily saying, we're still not feeling very confident, we don't think we're fast enough, no expectations, don't look at us. And then actually, now they are one of the fastest cars out there.
So you think they've caught up and now they are...
But this whole time they've been pretending like it's just not good enough and they're not getting anywhere. And sneakily, they've blindsided me and come up and been amazingly fast, because Alonso was on course to win two races in a row.
The Ferrari was not a very good car at the start of the season. That is still true.
But it's unusual for Ferrari to be able to develop their way that quickly. Usually that is reserved for McLaren, who have spectacularly failed in that regard so far this year.
Interesting.
It's kind of like they've reversed.
McLaren have gone backwards and Ferrari have gone forwards. So has anybody left McLaren and gone to Ferrari? Yes.
Well, there is a different, not Ferrari, but if you look elsewhere, Williams have got a lot better this year.
Who are you blaming for that then?
Someone left Williams and went to McLaren.
Yeah, that is harsh. I know Sam Michael is coming for an awful lot of criticism from me, as well as anybody else. His job, I don't think, makes much difference. Has no bearing on aerodynamics and car pace and that kind of thing.
But didn't you tell me that he was in charge of the pit stops at McLaren?
He's in charge of, what is he, like race director or something? So he's in charge of getting all the people in the right place at the right time.
Sporting
and that includes the
director.
Right, and that includes the pit stops. So yeah, that is Sam Michael's watch, and they haven't been stellar, but they were very good at Silverstone, and McLaren was still damn slow.
Yeah.
So it's not all his fault.
No, but if he is in charge of the pit stops, I mean, he has a lot of head scratching to do for things that have happened so far this year. So McLaren are slow, we know, and it is a bit surprising to see them.
Jenson Button's pace is worse than surprising. Surprising is not a strong enough word. Shocking?
Yeah. The bit I am surprised about is that they don't seem to know what to do about it. Usually, it always feels like they have a plan. They're working on it. At the moment, it feels like they're just wandering around going, this is funny. This car's a bit slow. I don't know what to do.
Somehow, Jenson is managing to make them look worse than they are. I think the strategy failed them in Silverstone. And that hurt Hamilton, because he could have been up a couple of places higher with a more sensible strategy. And then their weekend wouldn't have looked too bad at all. More concerning, I think, than all of the above is that Lotus have this massive pace and they're unable to string together a race weekend and to do anything with it. You've got a Lotus car there that's as fast as the car that won the race. And yet, what are they? Fifth, sixth, seventh? That's where they're coming in each race.
There was radio traffic from Hamilton saying we shouldn't have covered Grosjean because he's way faster than us.
He was.
He was. But Grosjean keeps having incidents, and sometimes when he's looking good, on a good charge, you know, going to finish high up in the points on the podium, and it doesn't happen because he crashes out or he has an accident. Now, here's an interesting thing.
Not only that, though, his engine did blow up at one race.
Yeah, I am one of Grosjean's biggest fans at the moment. It changes. I'm quite flighty like that, you know, it happens. But I'm one of his biggest fans at the moment. It seems to me that he could have a lot more points than he does already, because things keep happening to him, and things also keep happening to Pastor Maldonado, and I am not his biggest fan, and it worries me that both of them seem to be caught up in lots of incidents, because I don't want to think that they are similar.
I can't imagine that Grosjean is anything like Pastor Maldonado. Pastor Maldonado is unique in this year's Formula One field in that he is probably the one driver who is there thanks to his money. Well, he's the
one driver thanks to his money. Really?
In this year's field, what other pay drivers are there?
Surely Carter Kane is a pay driver.
Well, yeah, I suppose he is. Okay, Kartikeyan and Maldonado. But they are the only two people who aren't there on genuine merit. I'm trying to think of anybody else who shouldn't be in this year's Formula One field.
Petrov?
No, I think actually he would probably... Okay, here's what I think about Vitaly Petrov. I think, it's controversial, I don't know if I can say this, had Lotus kept him instead of Kimi Raikkonen, I think they would have more points than they currently do this season.
Are you saying that just to get in my good books?
No, not at all. Petrov knew the team, and I don't think he did a terrible job with the car last year, and I think the car is faster than it was last year. I understand that Romain had some issues at the start of the season and needed to get his eye in, but I think he's
getting there.
I think he's finding the pace. He's unlocked the pace in that car. What I would say is Kimi Raikkonen, he's not unlocked the pace yet, and he's come back from his hiatus. And he's not done, I don't think he's done any better than Vitaly Petrov would have done in that car.
Yeah, and there was some epic Kimi radio in this week's race edit, as pointed out by Badger GP, where they tell him to, I don't know what they were telling him to do, push harder or get this corner right or something. And he said, I'm doing my best. Leave me alone.
But your teammate is doing better.
Yeah. If that's your best, you're not getting the most out of the car.
It's not good enough. I did have one question about Lotus, which I wanted to broach on the show and to the people in the comments. And with Danny Behar now out of Group Lotus, is it okay to like Lotus F1 again? Is it cool again? Because he was the big problem and the thing we didn't like with the whole argument with Tony Fernandez in the name, right? Now I'm allowed to like them again.
Well,
they've got Kimi, they've got Romain, they've got a fast car, the livery is unfortunate, and the name is slightly unfortunate, but I'm allowed to like them again, aren't I?
You can like whoever you want. They're not Renault.
And aren't they though? Well, it's the same people.
Yeah, but they're not.
It's still got Eric.
No. Then they're not going to be Renault again. But you can like them again now that they don't have what's his face anymore.
I want to like them again.
Well, that's all right then. You do that. People are pointing out that Kimi has finished second twice, and you know he's done all right. So you're being a bit harsh by saying it's just not good enough.
How many times did Petrov finish twice? I think Kimi and Petrov are about the same right now. I'm not saying that Kimi couldn't become better. I'm just saying that if they kept Petrov, they'd be maybe a bit farther ahead.
Where I was trying to go with this whole conversation was Maldonado. And
oh, why didn't you say so?
Crashing a lot.
Tell me what you think of Maldonado.
Well, in the last show, I think I expressed my opinion quite well.
Remind me.
I said I hate him. And I have not changed that opinion. I have not revised it at all. I think it's harsh of me to say. Hate is a strong word. I'm going to go with it. That incident with Perez, it could have been a racing incident. Looked slightly like it was Pastor's fault to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, he did say afterwards that he had the cold tyres and couldn't stop in time or whatever. But there's just something about the attitude that is like, it's not my fault. It wasn't me. He can say what he likes. I don't care.
And what do you think of Perez's statement that he's a danger?
Well, if what he says is true and they've been talking about him, other drivers have been chatting together and complaining, then there's probably something to worry about, isn't there?
I could imagine... Well, we know for a fact that Lewis Hamilton has spoken out against Pastor Maldonado. He did last year when they had an incident at Monaco and they had an incident at Spa. And I can see that more than one driver has issues with the way Pastor's driving, but he has won a race. You know, won a race. Well, it's not easy to win a race in Formula One, is it? You can't just rock up and just go ahead and just pop one in.
Everyone says, which we were going to discuss in my show notes that never came to fruition.
Mm.
Everyone then was suddenly, oh, Pastor's won a race. I hope you're revising your opinion of him now. Well, no, actually. I know it's not easy, but for some reason, he was on pole position, and it's not hard to win a race from pole position.
It is still... I still think it's hard to win a Formula One race.
You're wrong.
I think he won a great... Okay. Fine. I think his race was a good race win. He won it with great tyre management abilities. He didn't throw the car off the road once. He looked after his engine and he brought the car home. And I don't, you know, we can't take that away from him. Okay. He didn't win it by fluke.
I'm not taking that away from him. He won a race because he was in a fast car and that was on pole position. And he managed to get it round in one piece to the end without crashing into anybody, which was quite surprising at the time.
Yep.
And he won a race. So yes, he's in the history books. He's won a race. That's great for him. He's also crashed into about 17 different people
over more than 2 years, because he did the same in GP2.
Over his whole career.
Over his entire racing career, he has crashed a lot.
Does one win make up for all of that? That's the real question, isn't it?
No, it doesn't. But there are other drivers in the Formula One field who haven't ever won a race and in some cases aren't ever likely to. Now, I would have put Pasta in that crowd before, but he's proved us wrong and he won the race. So I'm not going to take that away from him either. I'm not defending the guy. But then again, we like it when Williams do well. Firstly, I like a Williams win. I like Williams having the money to develop their car. And Pasta brought both of those to the team.
In the comments, I think Ryan has summed up the whole conversation really in one sentence. It just says, Pasta does look the kind of chap who would cut in front of you in a Starbucks. And that's it. He does. He would chop in front of you.
Yeah, fine. But he also looks like the kind of guy who I don't want to get on the wrong side of. Love you, Pasta.
Talking of chopping, did you see that Fernando Alonso?
At the start of the race?
Yeah.
Cheeky monkey. I tell you what, if that was Schumacher, I'd have been livid.
But because it's not, you're not.
Well, the thing is, Fernando has yet to make a career out of chopping people up off the start line. However, I have got my eye on him because that was rude. And Paul Webber had to do the opposite manoeuvre to make sure that he didn't end up colliding with the guy. I thought it was unnecessary. Did Alonso get a terrible start and felt the need to defend aggressively? Was he always planning to do that?
Well, he didn't get a Vettel-style start. And actually, through the whole race, really, he never managed to pull out a massive gap to Red Bull. It looks like those two cars are quite similar on pace.
But did he have it in his head that Webber was going to make an astonishing start and he just had to make sure that
Webber.
He couldn't... Yeah. It seemed over the top.
It did seem unnecessary, but maybe he was just paranoid about the start of the race. Interestingly, because we've watched the race edit, the official F1 race edit, quite recently, and it seems like Red Bull knew practically the whole time what they were doing. They had their strategy thought out, and when Alonso came out of his last stop on the option tyres, they knew that they were going to be able to.
Their race was there. That is, yeah. We've got to do a better job of keeping on top of driver strategies during the race, because I didn't see that unfolding the way that Red Bull did. And obviously they've got more information because they're a Formula One team and they've got lots of people working on it. But the fact that they knew exactly how the rest of the race would go purely from that one stop leads me to think that we just don't have, you know, we're not enough on top of it, even with the fat by fat box and everything that goes on and all the comments. I still missed the way that Alonso tyres, you know, how much Alonso had to give on those tyres. And we should have known that and we didn't. And it's very impressive that they could then call the race from that point.
Yeah, particularly because the tyres have just been such an unknown quantity this year. I mean, all the teams are saying...
Not to Red Bull.
No.
They know.
All the teams are saying they can't make predictions anymore and they're giving up with that kind of thing. And it's just a free-for-all, really. But Red Bull seem to know what they're doing.
Mm.
I've always said the tyres confuse me, though. So it wasn't a surprise that I didn't know what was going on. That you didn't know, that was more of a surprise.
I'm disappointed in myself. Yeah, I must try and pay more attention in Germany.
Do you need to try a bit harder? Actually, Webber, talking of Mr. Webber, he went on to win the race with his good strategy. And through that whole weekend, he was saying things like, my future is still unknown. When it's the time is right, I'll decide. There's no contract talks happening or anything. It's all fine. And then 2 days later, he signed with Red Bull again for another year. One more year.
He likes the... rolling contracts. It suits him.
A year at a time.
What do you make of this then? What are you thinking? This is good for who? Good for Webber?
Firstly, I'm a bit annoyed because Webber doesn't really strike me as a type to be all, you know, the coy type. No, nothing's going on. It's all secret and fine. I'm not going to make a decision yet. And then 2 days later, it's all signed, sealed and delivered. Unless it really did happen in those 2 days just because he won the race. But that I was a bit annoyed about that.
Okay.
Because Webber's always more outspoken and honest and not the type to do that, I've always felt.
Okay. And do you think that it's good for Red Bull?
They seem to be a good partnership. It's worked well for them so far now that they've worked out all the kinks. I think also what is interesting is that it takes Webber out of the equation for the Ferrari seat. So that is still very much up in the air.
It is. But Massa, we talked on which show would it have been? It would have been the
previous show.
We talked previously, recently, about Felipe Massa. And I recall saying I hoped that he had turned a corner and he could prove it in Silverstone. And I think he did. I think in qualifying, at one point, he was faster than Fernando Alonso. That's good. It was damp conditions. It was tricky conditions, not somewhere where Massa often excels. He did spin in the wet, but then so did Alonso. I think Alonso spun twice during the weekend in the wet and Massa only did it once. So that's good. And did he do enough to save his seat? I don't know, but it's a good step in the right direction. You've now got Monaco, you've got Canada, you've got Valencia, and you've got Silverstone. All reasonable performances. Two slip-ups in amongst there, but actually forward-looking, decent performances.
Yeah. I mean, he has been doing better, but I don't know. I really like Massa.
Who would you like alongside Alonso instead? Because I wouldn't want anybody to go to that seat and be battered over the head with Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, it is hard because it's only ever going to be someone from a midfield team that wants to make that massive step up. And then they're not doing themselves any favours, really. It's just because it's for the glory of the team rather than for any hope of being able to beat Alonso. So the other interesting thing is because Alonso is such a young spring chicken, he has, I mean, he's got like at least 10 years left of driving. Mm-hmm. So no one is going to be able to be in that car alongside him for 10 years and get to number one above him.
Alonso is at the absolute peak of his game. I thought he was great in Renault. I thought he was absolutely magnificent when he took his two world championships, and he's only got better and better since then. For some reason, the two terrible years at Renault that followed his trip to McLaren didn't deter him. They didn't put him off. He didn't sort of lose interest. It almost seemed like it just spurred him on. He was learning all the time, and he's getting better. And he's without question, in my mind, the best driver in the field right now in Formula One. But that won't last forever.
Not going to last for 10 more years.
No. His reflexes and his fitness will tail off. Look at Michael Schumacher. Look at Kimi Räikkönen. The older you get, the harder it gets. And that won't be the case. And at some point in the future, someone will come along and beat him. Fernando Alonso hasn't got the fastest car, but he's at the top of the championship table by some distance. And that's a testament to what he's done this year. Did I hear that it's been something like what is the preposterous figure that he hasn't been out of the points since something like 2010?
Yep.
Finishing the points every single race. That is, the guy is a train, but not like a trolley train.
No, a good train.
Like an express train.
Yeah.
The guy is absolutely astounding. And there are comments, I'm just reading now, comments, Perez to go to Ferrari. I think Massa one more year. Give Perez one more year at Sauber, which is a great place for Perez to be learning. And then Perez to replace Massa in 2014. That would be good. That gives the guy 2 years to follow Alonso while he's still got his pace. And then time to replace him as the Ferrari number one driver in the long, long-term future.
Yeah, because Massa came from Sauber too, didn't he? So
it works. That works.
Poetry. Whilst we're talking about driver switches and stuff, there is one more thing I just wanted to quickly mention. We talked briefly about the young driver test at Silverstone earlier when we were referencing Marussia. Williams also had Valtteri Bottas there. And he was there for both days. Over 2 days, he did almost 300 laps. And round Silverstone, that's like six races.
So that's an impressive reliability for the car.
He was fastest on both days, obviously, because he was only against Marussia and HRT. But he must be quite fit. I wonder whose seat he's in the running for.
Well, it can't be, if you're talking Williams, it can't be Pastis because he's funding the team.
Damn it.
So it's got to be Senna.
Oh, that's no good.
I think when you did your team-by-team review this week for the Silverstone Grand Prix, you pointed out that Senna did a sterling job, but he went almost unnoticed in the Grand Prix. And I have to admit, I barely saw the guy all weekend. You know, Senna's slowly working his way up in that team, but I don't think it's going to be enough. And I think Bottas is so good. He might be the next Hülkenberg. You know, he might be Williams' next discovery.
Well, don't say
discovery.
That, Hulk has gone off nowhere at the moment.
He has. Gone off the boil. He's not working it Force India as I'd hoped it to be.
I thought that was going to be brilliant.
I did think that would be fireworks for that team. It would be the team to watch. And it's not really happened at all. In Hülkenberg, in the last two laps, his tyres went off a la Kimi.
Well, yeah, that's not his fault. If it happens to Kimi, it can happen to anyone.
Yeah, but that was disappointing. I think Bottas has got a good future. I think, you know, he could be in Formula 1 very soon. Let's talk, whilst you're talking about that test, though, one thing I must put forward. This test, the Silverstone test, was rumoured. There was talk of teams wanting to do it, not wanting to do it. Then it was declared it was going to be illegal.
I didn't think it was happening. I was completely taken by surprise when it was suddenly
What's the deal then with the teams who decided to do it? Because they are effectively getting a free test mid-season. They're doing aero work. They are potentially pulling they're climbing up the field with this test. But only three teams decided to do it. You'd have to say that the teams who showed up are the teams who were most strapped for cash. HRT, not a rich team. Marussia, not a rich team. Williams, not a particularly well-off team either. So did they do this test for cost-saving reasons because they couldn't afford to do the young driver test at Abu Dhabi? Or did they do it for? Did they gamble and say, "Well, okay, well let's do a mid-season test and get some aero, get an aero advantage, but it might rain and we might be washed out and we might have to throw it away and it might be a, you know, did they gamble? Did they roll the dice and say, "Let's try it. Let's see what we can get out of a Silverstone test." What happened there? I don't know. I wonder that Williams might be even faster than the next race, and that's a bit of an unfair advantage.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea. It doesn't make any sense to me, and it was so confusing. Which teams are doing it? Who's not doing it? Is it even going ahead? I don't think it's worked out very well from a fan's point of view. But then it's testing, and that isn't always for the fans.
At the end of the season, I guess we're going to have the remainder of the teams doing their younger driver tests, and they'll be testing their cars for next year.
Yeah.
So do Williams lose out on their 2013 chassis plans? Will the tyres? But you know, will the tyres change for next year? And will probably be giving an advantage to anyone who decided to forego this test.
It's too going to be many questions.
So all I have from this test is questions. I have no answers, only speculation and more questions.
Out of the blue, out of nowhere, it was a big surprise to everyone. Codemasters, the people that have licensed F1 to make the games for the PlayStation and Xbox and things like that, they came up with
spoken like a true gamer.
Absolutely. They came up with a new concept, F1 Race Stars.
And it looks just like Mario Kart.
It's sort of Mario Kart F1 styly.
It is perfect.
Little
it is
bobble-headed exactly, characters.
It is what we've been waiting for, even though we didn't know we were waiting for it.
No, all we've seen is the name, obviously, and a sort of teaser video where the little bobble-headed characters, little Fernando Alonso, little Lewis Hamilton with his little beard and everything. Fantastic attention to detail. They line up in their cars on the racetrack and go off, and then it goes up like a roller coaster.
It goes up like a Hot Wheels track. It's the best okay. description, even One though you don't know what that is.
I had a Hot Wheels car or two.
Did you?
I had brothers. I mean, I still have brothers. anyway, I am...
You stole their Hot Wheels and killed them, didn't you?
I'm rubbish at racing games. So although this does appeal to me just as a concept because I like the characters, you know, what do I know about racing?
If it's like Mario Kart, that is the Formula One that Bernie has always dreamed of. Formula One racing with shortcuts and jumps and cars bumping into each other and loop-the-loops and all that kind of thing. I think it will be absolutely fantastic. It's the kind of game that I can get into because the current Codemasters game is fantastically detailed, but it requires an awful lot of effort and commitment and time,
I think,
which I don't have. I like throwaway games, which I can just dive into and then dive out of and forget all about. And absolutely. This new game fits my needs perfectly.
I think Lukey, who is the expert on gaming things, he was saying, I think it was on Twitter, that the F1 2012 and 2011 and all those things are for dedicated people. This is for... not dedicated people, the casual gamer. And it's good that they're doing both, whereas the previous people to make the game just concentrated on the once a year update to the same format all the time. Mm. Whereas this was a complete surprise. No one knew it was coming. It's something fun and exciting, and it's good use of their F1 license.
Indeed. A shout out to Merkin in the comments. Mario Andretti Kart would probably make a nice name. That would work. I like that. It's perfect for me. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy a console purely to play this game.
I was going
to
say,
that's how good it is.
You're going to buy it, but we don't have a PlayStation.
I don't care. I'm going to get one. This is my kind of game.
Although we haven't been able to record anything recently, the website has been manic, especially this past couple of weeks. We've had so many guest posts. It's been absolutely incredible.
Unprecedented.
We've still got new features coming in. People are writing posts about their experiences on track. We had a new on track with Kai.
Love that series. If anybody else has recently gone out on a track day anywhere on any continent and taken up the art of precision driving in any form, it could be karting, it could be performance cars, whatever, we love to hear from people's first driving experiences. Kai wrote about hers. Was it last year? Maybe perhaps even 18 months ago, the first post. And then she's written a second. She's gone back after a long gap and how her approach and her day has changed in that period.
Yeah, we've got poetry, we've got cartoons, we've got people listening to podcasts and telling us all about them, podcasts other than our own.
Shock horror.
I know.
Can't believe people listen to other podcasts. It's not like we haven't made you loads and loads and filled your, all your weeks and months.
They had to go off and listen to other things.
Oh, is that what it was?
And report back. Yeah, so essentially for the last few weeks, all I've been doing is being a sub-editor.
It's a glamorous life.
It's not the most glamorous life, but the content has been incredible. If you go to sidepodcast.com, there's so much to look at. You can spend hours there.
And not only that, there is more to come. As this live show finishes, there's another great guest post to go up. I think we've got a further guest post on Saturday. That will be, I think that's from Bridge. That's a fine guest post. Yep. There's more in coming. I mean, there's so much stuff coming down the line. It's amazing. The efforts from the community are just incredible.
It's worth every second of sub-editing because the creativity is just amazing. And we're so happy and proud and privileged to share it.
It is privileged. I mean, if you look at the articles, each article in the feature section, they're more than 1,000 words long. These aren't just throwaway pieces that people are putting together. So much thought and so much effort has gone into these. I insist everybody, if you listen to the show, please go to the homepage, top right, featured articles. Make sure you go through everyone on the list because they are all fantastic. You won't be disappointed. Look on Soap Podcast homepage. There is something for everybody. I guarantee it.
While we're talking about the website, we have had quite a lot of complaints recently. I don't know if complaints is the right word. Suggestions, feedback, complaints that people can't find the events. We have live events and threads.
Such as this one.
This is live streaming event. We have threads for the races and practice sessions and all that. And for other things, we have recently done Wimbledon and the Euros and all that. We're going to do the Olympics soon. But people can't find them and they are getting confused.
Mm.
We are going to work on that.
Mm. Well, there's two things to say. Firstly, I understand why people are struggling to find them because it's only the only place you can sort of they're visible is on the sidebar. They're on the homepage, but they're a little way down there. What's interesting is because events aren't all necessarily Formula One, we sort of want to keep them tucked away in the corner because where we went wrong with Side Podcast 18 months ago was that the Formula One bit of the site kind of vanished.
Yeah.
And it was, you looked on the homepage and it was anything in the world at all but Formula One. And we still want to have time for the non-Formula One parts of the site. But if you were a new person who's never seen Side Podcast before, you want Formula One front and center. At the top will be is Formula One and all the stories and the features, they're all Formula One. And then as you go down the site, you've got the extra bits and it's almost like the secret parts of Side Podcast, which only the dedicated listeners and dedicated readers know about. And that's the events. So it's almost like if you're interested in following a live stream, if you're interested in joining in the comments, if you're interested in taking part in all these interesting bits, you almost have to work a little for it.
Yeah.
You know, you put your effort in and then you find it.
I understand the people saying they can't find it, but to me, it's obvious because I go to sidepodcast.com/events and have a look there because there's a great table that tells you what's coming up and what's live and everything.
Yes.
And that isn't obvious, perhaps, from the homepage, but once you know it's there, you should just go there.
You can bookmark sidepodcast.com/events, just as you should bookmark sidepodcast.com/features. Also, for your bookmark list, sidepodcast.com/comments has been updated in this past week, and now it's much easier to follow multiple discussions across the site, easier than it's ever been. I know we've made a lot of changes to the comments recently, but this one is a positive thing as opposed to something we've removed. And we've added lots of functionality, and you can't miss out on any conversation as you could in the past. It's quite simple to track what's going on. That's sidepodcast.com/comments to see what people are talking about and what are the hot topics on the site at the moment.
Back to the events thing just quickly. We are going to look at sort of putting the time and things on the homepage as well.
There's definitely improvements to be made.
We're not writing it off completely, but also it's not going to be a massive banner right at the top. On the homepage, very shortly, there will be an edition of Feet Up Friday because I'm afraid to say this one has almost come to an end. Then I'll edit it. Then it'll be on the site.
We be done.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Well, I think it was pretty good. Not bad.
Did it all come flooding back to you?
I think we need a bit more practice, to be honest.
Did it come flooding back to you like rain at Silverstone?
Oh, God. We're right back where we started, aren't we?
Full circle.